Hello, welcome to People and Profit. I'm Kate Moody. Today, we're looking at all things chocolate, and specifically the cocoa supply chain. In a minute, we'll be talking to a pioneer in making ethical chocolate. But first, the cocoa industry in Haiti is one of the few bright spots in an economy suffocating amid gang violence and political instability. Exports of fermented cocoa to Europe are having a significant impact for small Haitian producers. It's also helping to create jobs. Karis Garland reports.
It may not look like much, but inside this box is both a precious commodity for European chocolate makers and a lifeline for cocoa producers in Haiti. Chocolaterie Dupec, in the French city of Tours, has been importing cocoa from the Caribbean nation for 12 years. Head chocolate maker Sébastien Arrault says it's unlike any other in the world.
We find notes of lavender, licorice, there can be notes of rubber. It's quite distinctive, and we make it into a really magical and beautiful product.
The company is able to import the cocoa thanks to Kélios, the only exporter of fermented cocoa from Haiti's Grand'Anse region. Today, the president of Kélios, as well as other representatives from the country's cocoa industry, are visiting the chocolate factory. It's part of a trip funded by the International Labour Organization to help actors in the Haitian cocoa industry strengthen relationships with European clients, as well as make new ones.
It gives them a boost to get back out into the field and explain to others who weren't able to come to France that the work they do matters.
However, a deteriorating security situation in Port-au-Prince has made exporting the cocoa incredibly complicated. The company is using alternative routes to get the product to the capital's main port, but at five times the cost.
Despite the setbacks, the Haitian delegation here at the Paris Chocolate Show is seeking to portray a positive image of their country, one of resilience.
Opening up to the international market has allowed Haitian cocoa farmers to quintuple their earnings, giving hope for dozens of small producers.
With the rise of cocoa prices, farmers' lives have improved. Before, prices didn't match the yields. They couldn't make a living from it.
Kélios also has plans to harness another natural resource in Haiti, breadfruit. It intends to build a factory to process the fruit into flour, the idea being to not only double revenue for small producers and create more direct jobs, but also to reduce food insecurity and dependence on imports.
We're joined now by Joke Ertz, director of credible scaling at Tony's Open Chain, part of the Dutch chocolate firm Tony's Chocolonely, which seeks to highlight inequalities and in particular child labor in the cocoa supply chain. Thank you for joining us today. Tell us first a little bit about your company's mission.
So Tony's Chocolonely, it's a chocolate company that makes impact, but the way we really think of ourselves is an impact company that makes chocolate. The core of our mission is to end exploitation in the cocoa industry. 20 years ago, our founder, Toon van der Keuken, a journalist, found out how incredibly integral child labor is of the cocoa supply chain. 60% of the world cocoa comes from West Africa. One in two children in West African cocoa are in child labor. This was shocking. It should be shocking. It is shocking. What's even more shocking is that the needle on that has moved very little since that's been highlighted 20 years ago today. Tony's Chocolonely exists to reverse this norm in the cocoa industry. So what we do is we have a sourcing practice that we call the five sourcing principles that really addresses systemically all of the, not just the inequity of child labor in the cocoa industry, but the exploitation of forests through deforestation, the exploitation of people through poverty, very, very low cocoa farming prices. That's what the five sourcing principles are designed to combat. Tony's Chocolonely has been doing this for quite a while, but about 5 years ago, we started the initiative where I work, which is Tony's Open Chain, where we open that sourcing model to other chocolate brands, even competing chocolate brands, because we believe firmly that these issues in cocoa we should solve together.
Now, tell me a bit more about that, because when this company was founded about 20 years ago, that name Chocolonely referred to it being fairly alone in its fight against exploitation in the chocolate supply chain. It is no longer a sole actor today, and your part of the company does indeed focus on cooperating with others, sometimes even with competitors.
That's right. So the whole goal is for Tony, which is Toon, the journalist, for Tony to no longer be quite so lonely. The roadmap from the beginning has been create consumer awareness amongst consumers that there is a really big issue in cocoa, that there is a lot of inequity built in that the supply chain, and that companies and consumers can make active choices to change against that. It was around lead by example. So Tony shook a lonely all by their lone, some trying to do something different. But it was really always around inspiring to act and inspiring the rest of the industry to take chances. So in a lot of ways, that's through Tony's Open Chain, where we pull competitors in and we collaborate on our sourcing of cocoa. But it's also in a lot of the other work that Tony Shokolonely does. We do a lot of lobbying at government level for better legislation, that this better way of doing business has to become the norm.
About two-thirds of the world's cocoa is produced in two countries, Ghana and Ivory Coast. Child labor is rampant in the industry there. Why has Tony's chosen to source its cocoa from those two powerhouses rather than looking elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a good question. Again, 60% of the world cocoa comes from Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire. So if you're not addressing the issues there, then you're not really addressing them at all. Ecuador has become a much larger cocoa growing country, and it always has been, but really has grown in the last years. We specifically choose to work where the issues that we're fighting are the most egregious. So again, child labor, there's about 1.56 million children in child labor in West Africa alone. That's a meaty piece of work that we really want to tackle, which is why we are focused on West Africa alone in our cocoa sourcing.
And it's worth pointing out that there is still a lot of work to do, because even within Tony's supply chain, there are instances of child labor.
There's so much work to do. And I think the first step is to, a lot like how European designs due diligence legislation, is looking and seeing and acknowledging that it exists. So we proudly publish the number of child labor cases that we find every year. In a sort of weird way, we're happy to find them, because if you don't find a case of child labor, you also can't tackle solving that piece of child labor. But we are seeing a lot of hope. So we've been working with our way of working and with our partner cooperatives for quite a few years now. And when we start working with a new partner cooperative, what we find when we're looking for cases of child labor is about the industry average of child labor prevalence. So we are indeed finding about 46 to 50% of children in child labor. And then we move to close them as quickly as possible. But in the co-ops where we've been working with for over 4 years, where we're also doing things like paying a much higher price for cocoa, working with them on labor and productivity, professionalizing labor, strong communities, strong farmers, we are seeing that child labor prevalence go down to under 4%. So from 46% to under 4% child labor prevalence. That shows that with focus, target, more money, more data, these are solvable problems. And we can eradicate child labor out of the cocoa industry.
Now, cocoa prices hit record highs in 2024, around $11,000 per ton on global markets. We know many farmers aren't reaping the rewards of those market movements. Are Tony's cocoa suppliers benefiting?
Trading prices on the market indeed went sky high, but as that was happening, the way Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire set their prices for cocoa farmers, farmers were not enjoying that market rally. So while brands were paying more for chocolate than ever, farmers were still living in poverty. On top of that, it was even worse for farmers, because the reason why there was such a supply spike is that production went down. There was a real climate shock in West Africa this year, and production went down from anywhere to 20 to 30%, depending on which numbers you're following. So farmers had even less cocoa to sell, and incomes went down even further. So it was a real crisis year in the sense that chocolate brands felt like they were paying a lot, and cocoa farmers were still not earning anything. In our system, in the five sourcing principles, we always top up the farm gate price, whatever it is, to a benchmark price called the living income reference price, which is set by fair trade. That price is supposed to enable a farmer to earn a living income. So no matter what the cocoa prices are doing, Tony Shokolonely and its mission allies, the other brands that join us in Tony's Open Chain, always commit to topping up to that living income reference price. We know that farmers need to earn more money per kilogram of cocoa in order to lift themselves out of poverty and send their children to school.
Climate change is one of the factors in that price surge, because it's affecting cocoa crops. How is Tony's Shokolonely dealing with changing weather patterns? What are you doing to become more sustainable?
Yeah, so it's the five source principles are so interrelated. It's not any one factor that leads to any one outcome. So yes, looking for cases of child labor and working with the community to solve them quickly as possible definitely drives those numbers down, but it's those other approaches as well. So it's in professionalizing labor, access to professional labor brigades for farmers. That one puts the, you know, that means there's access to a different type of labor besides child labor for farmers, but also a more professional type of labor leading to better pruning practices, better agroforestry practices, all factors that allow a farmer to be more resilient in the face of climate shock. Climate change is a reality. It is a crisis. Training on good agricultural practices and access to the ability to implement those good agricultural practices is how we're working with farmers to increase climate resilience.
Last year, Tony's made over $160 million in revenue. Most years, it just about breaks even. Can being an ethical business also mean being a profitable business?
That is certainly our aim to show. There is a reason why Tony Shugalonly is a for-profit business and not a non-profit. I think that the idea is that embedding these sourcing practices, these ethical sourcing practices, can and should be part of a profitable company.
The end of the year holiday season, often a big period of big sales for sweet treats. Does Tony's have any festive surprises in store?
Chocolate season. I live in the Netherlands where we have, of course, the Sinterklaas letters, which are on the market, which my kids already have the ones with their names on it. And then really popular in the market is the countdown calendar. So not Advent, it's religious neutral, but the countdown calendar to an exciting event during the holiday season. My kids always love that one.
I think chocolate season could be any season at all, personally. Yoka Ertz, thank you so much for joining us on People and Profit today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's all for now. Don't forget to look for People and Profit on the podcast platform of your choice, or as always, on the France 24 website. Until next time, thanks for watching.